From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up, pianist and performer Hershey Felder will join us to talk about his one-man show on famed French composer Claude Debussy. In the show, part of his great composer series, he explores the life and performs the music of Debussy and finds a personal connection with the composer. Then at 10:30, Oakland native and longtime director, producer, and playwright Nataki Garrett will join us. She joined the Oregon Shakespeare Festival this month as incoming artistic director. We'll talk with her about her vision for the company and her plans to widen its audiences. It's all next after this news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Playwright, actor, and pianist Hershey Felder has been merging his talents on stage for decades in his Great Composer theatrical series. In the final show in the series, Hershey Felder, A Paris Love Story, he plays French composer Claude Debussy, performing his revolutionary pieces and recounting a romantic life in Paris at the turn of the century, and the show, the 20th century, that is, and the show describes Hirschfelder's personal connection with the composer and his own journey to trace Debussy's footsteps in Paris. And welcome back to Forum, Hirschfelder.
It's always nice to see you.
Delightful to see you. And I should say, before we begin here, somebody asked me over the weekend, I've heard so much about Hershey Felder and his piano playing, but what actually does he do? And I said, well, it's not only that he's a magnificent virtuoso piano player, but he's also an actor and a storyteller and a playwright and a set designer, and the list goes on and on. And I also said, and somebody described you as a conjurer of spirits, too, but I also said an educator, because so many of the pieces on these great composers are so educational.
I like that, you know, because all those wonderful artistic things are fun. But at the end of the day, one wants the audience to come away with a little bit more knowledge about who we're dealing with than when they went in. And Debussy is somebody who's music is somewhat familiar, certainly if you know Ocean's 11, you know, at the end of the fountain scene, you've got his Clair de Lune. And young people are asking me, oh, I remember that. Did he write that for Ocean's 11? I said, well, not quite, but anyway.
But people know Clair de Lune, of course. Well,
a lot of people are very familiar with it. I mean, you know, anybody's been around the piano, but, you know, his music is not as easily familiar, as readily familiar as others. So to have people really understand that he was the very beginning of Impressionism, even though he didn't like the term, that he was the beginning of jazz, that he brought music into the new world, that he brought music into the new generation, that with Après-midi d'un faune, with a flute, he actually created the new world of music, which what we call movie music today. And people are making that association that when they hear underscoring to film and cinema, and it has this descriptive kind of sound and color, that kind of idea originated very much so with Claude Debussy.
Well, you are educating us. In fact, his music was a kind of rebellion against symphonic music, wasn't it?
It was a rebellion against not only symphonic music, but every kind of music that existed within the context of its rules in his day. The notion for Debussy was that he wanted to break those rules and not reinvent the rule, or not reinvent music as it had been known, but actually create a new kind of music. So whereas we all symphonists and composers were dealing with the scale that he'd been invented, he was told, why does everything have to be based on this scale? Why can't we invent a new scale and go from there and hear things a little bit differently? And he opened up ears in the world to the possibility of that kind of sound. And for me, there's so much color, so much beauty in the sound that it's quite miraculous.
It's dreamlike, often described. Yeah?
Yes, and I think the scale he came up with, the whole tone scale, which sort of stretches what we had known as being the well-tempered regular scale that the ear was accustomed to, sends us off into a dream world. It's a little fantasy island, but it works.
Talking to Hershey Felder, and his new production is called A Paris Love Story. And this is a personal story for you, too. This is the first time, I think, in all the composers that you've worked with that you have brought Hershey Felder into the picture?
Well, you know, it was a question as to how to tell the story, and I do have a very strong connection. It goes back to the days of when I first learned the piano, and the first real serious piece that I was given was Clair de Lune. And Clair de Lune, I was a little boy, I was 6 years old. It so happens I was given this piece to play because it's my mother's favorite piece of music. Well, it was my mother's favorite piece of music. She was very young at the time. She was in her mid-20s. And she was suffering a terrible state because she was suffering from cancer. She had had a mastectomy. And in those days, that was the approach to the whole thing was quite terrible. And she was very young. And very little made her feel less pain in those days. But you know what they said in those days, this is in the 70s, it was in, she was operated in 76, they said, if the disease will not kill you, the treatment is likely to. And there was a lot of suffering going on. And music was one of the things that was able to take her to a very different place. And Claire de Lune was something that she would ask me to play again and again. And I really didn't understand, you know, why I was a child. But as time went on and we lost her when I was 13, I began to understand the effect of music and the calming effect that it can have on the spirit. And, you know, it sounds a little bit esoteric until you actually put the music on and listen to some Debussy, and it takes you to another world. And I realized that there is a huge element of healing that can happen when you deal with music. And so that evoked a lot of ideas for this story and how Debussy actually himself quite a bit suffered. He was quite a character.
He was quite a character. Very I mean, much just, so. Just his love life alone.
You he know, was a womanizer. But, you know, I mean, I think in those days people think, oh, wasn't this charming? It was French. you know, today we look at that and we say, this is not charming at all. It's not okay that two women that he lived with shot themselves over him.
Sounds like Ted Hughes,
well,
almost.
Yeah. Well, what's complicated about it is, you know, were they a little bit off themselves to do this to begin with, or was that just a reaction? Were they seeking attention? And neither died. You know, that's important. One got a bullet lodged in her vertebra, and she was fine, lived a long life, and the other one survived the shooting. But, you know, he was complicated, and he was very self-involved and very self-indulgent. And the interesting thing, you can trace a lot of composers over the years and really understand them through their music as individuals. Really, you can see in Chopin, you can see a certain sense of melancholy that existed in him that exists in his music. In Beethoven, a fight for humanity, which is what he was doing. You know, even grandiose Wagner, this sense of being greater than anything, you know, these Aryan sense of being huge. But in Debussy, you don't find him as much in his music. You find the character that you think you're going to see or know, and a very delicate, sensitive, soft human being. I think elements of him were quite like that. But if you look at the character and how he lived his life, tough, prickly, kind of, you don't hear that in his music as much.
Well, I like what, in fact, you mentioned Wagner, what he had to say about Wagner, which was really fascinating. Well, you do that scholarly digging and even get those kinds of things into the show.
And it's very funny. Debussy said of Wagner that, he is a sunset that is being mistaken for a dawn. You know, the interesting thing, there was a big push and pull with Debussy and Wagner because, of course, he saw the advances that Wagner made in music, certainly resolving cadences. You know, Wagner didn't. It was sort of the sexual energy, constantly going forward, needing more. And he managed to find that in music. And Debussy was someone who, of course, drew upon that and somehow said everything needs to change. It can't be like that. So we had this love-hate relationship, and I think he understood what was so great about Wagner, but at the same time he was fighting against it. And also he was looking for something that was entirely French, because French music at the turn of the...
It's very much a nationalist, yeah.
Well, but it was German, you know. Yeah. I mean, the greats were Germans, you know. That was what's considered was great. And he was looking for that French identity and color of sound. And turns out for me he was what I would call the creator of modern jazz. And even Ravel, you know, his contemporary, admitted that The Afternoon of a Faun Prelude is the single most beautiful piece of music. I happen to agree. I find such beauty in that music. It's remarkable.
You also reminded me of a line of Woody Allen's where he said he heard Wagner and a whole symphony, went out and wanted to conquer Europe. After that.
Well, you know, Wagner was a character. I've looked at him, too, through the eyes of his father-in-law, who was Franz Liszt. And Wagner was not easy. Somebody the other day, I was talking to somebody, I don't remember who it was an interview, said, I have a Wagner joke. The interviewer said, I said, yeah, because he was such a funny guy. No, he wasn't an easy man whatsoever, but it's all very interesting to delve into these lives in the context of where they were, how they lived.
You become these lives. I mean, you occupy them. You become, as an actor, that character.
Well, thank you. It's very complimentary. The idea is to give the illusion, of course, because if I become them, I will have lost my mind. But, you know, it's about picking and choosing all the right things in order to eventually present a character that feels full and complete and give the audience a place to go in their imaginations with what may have been like to be with this kind of guy.
Your mother say to you on her deathbed, remember the moonlight?
Yes. She was in a wheelchair, and it was the last time I saw her. I was 13, she was 35, and I remember distinctly, it's very interesting, my sister, who's 4.5 years younger than I am, remembers being in the hospital that day, but I don't remember anybody but my mother. So it was very interesting to see her in the hallway. She was in a wheelchair. She looked like a child. She was 35 years old. She didn't remember very much because so much had, I learned later, so much had left her. Her faculties had left her. But the last thing she said was, always remember moonlight.
Talking again with Hirschfelder, his new work is a Paris love story and has a lot to do with Paris. It has a lot to do with Hirschfelder, but it also has a great deal to do principally with Claude Debussy. And he has that accent nailed. I keep thinking about all the different accents you've done of all these different composers, too. I mean, that's another it's an extraordinary talent. I mean, it's like Meryl Streep. You know, she can do East Poland or she can do, you know, western part of Bosnia or something. But let me give out the phone number because I want to invite listeners to join us, particularly those of you who have some interest in Debussy, but any of the composers. And this is the last of your series, but I think, isn't it a Rachmaninoff working?
Well, you know, I keep on threatening. It's been 10 years I'm threatening. This is the last. You know, so Debussy the second to last for the moment.
Well, let me for the moment give our phone number. And those of you who have seen Hirschfelder, he has certainly a devoted and passionate following down in Mountain View where the play is being performed. It's going to be through May 5th at the Mountain View Center for Performing Arts. It's world premiere, by the way. And you can join us if you have some thoughts or some questions about the great composer Claude Debussy or questions you'd like to ask our guest Hirschfelder, who has done Gershwin and who has done Irving Berlin and who has done Beethoven and Tchaikovsky, and the list goes on and on. And like I said, he is also an educator and has much to share about these great composers and about their work. And he has played them all magnificently, I might add. You're welcome to join us. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We welcome your call, so please feel free to be part of the program. And again, the number to call is 866-733-6786. You can also join us with any questions or comments by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. Or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And let's hear some Debussy. Well, that's Arabesque number one. And what are your feelings when you hear that, when you listen to that?
When I hear that, first of all, do we know who the pianist is?
I was just wondering that myself. We can find that out and we'll.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. What do I hear when I hear that? Well, this is early Debussy, of course.
Yes.
And it's when he felt that he had not yet found his a new style. I think he was still felt that he was composing in the old way, in the old style, and just finding new things. To me, this is quite played a little bit aggressively, which is interesting, and it's a different approach. My approach to a piece like this is a little bit more languid. I hear water in it, water falling, and he would have probably gotten angry. He says, "Oh, you don't hear any impression in my music." He was quite prickly. Said, "Impressionism is for imbeciles. I can do it for real." You know, just. So, you know, well, I mean, you have to think of Impressionism in his day was really considered a derogatory term. It was considered for people who didn't know how to paint lines straight or didn't know how to blend color on a palette. You know, it was considered for people who just didn't have the fine art of finessing things. And he didn't want that to be his legacy. And of course it wasn't. He was very clear what he was doing. Anyway, this arabesque. Arabesque, interestingly, is a Moorish Arabic expression of nature in some kind of linear design. So if you take a look at, you know, old Arabic kind of Moorish designs, you know, that you see on tapestries and rugs and so on, that's basically where the word arabesque comes from. And in Debussy's day, a musical line that swerved and turned and did kind of gentle sways was called arabesque. So it's not a dance. One was always the assumption that arabesque was a dance. It's not so at all. Arabesque is really that beautiful...
Yeah, Moorish roots, really. Yeah.
Pardon me?
Moorish roots.
Moorish roots, yeah. Arabesque.
Yeah.
Like Arabic, like. And so, you know, I think if you look at people, especially in Roger Nichols' book, which is all of people who discuss Debussy, sort of friends of Debussy on Debussy, you know, and Nichols collected this lovely collection. Everybody who refers to Debussy's music, they call them Debussy's arabesque. So it's not particular piece. It's actually the style of music, these swaying, swerving lines that didn't have... You'd never say, well, Wagner's arabesque. I don't think that would work, you know. Wagner's assault, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds oxymoronic when you say Wagner's arabesque. And actually, apropos of that, I want to get to as many of our calls as we can. Lots of people want to talk with you. But here's a tweet from Olivia. It says, everyone knows Claire de Lune, but I'm curious, what Debussy works get overlooked?
What Debussy works get overlooked?
A lot of them you play, obviously.
Well, I play, this is in the context of the world, not necessarily the play, right? Yes. So in terms of the looks that overlooked, there are two schools of thought of the last works toward the end of his life. Some say, well, they don't really rise to the occasion, and others say that they are remarkable, and we're talking about the studies for piano. He created studies for piano. If you look at them, for me, they paint such amazing pictures of the future of what one can do with the instrument and one what is looking at. And a lot of people say, well, they're kind of dull there, you know. I disagree with that. So those tend to get overlooked. The last sonatas, which are the last pieces that he committed to compose in the years of his last years when he was terribly sick. And just to get a little bit of that, he died in 1918 of cancer. And that was a complicated time for him because he was very sick for 6 years. And so my view about those pieces at the end is sometimes they're not given as much due as they deserve in terms of the concert public, although people are playing them. There is...
What about La Mer? That...
Well, La Mer is very famous, but you know...
It's overlooked, nonetheless.
I don't know that it's overlooked. I just don't know that it has the same kind of attraction that Beethoven's Fifth may have, or Hoyotoho of Wagner. It's one of the things about Debussy, because it's descriptive in its way, it allows people to think what they want of the music as they hear it. And so it doesn't hook into a specific thing as much as, say, a Beethoven's Fifth, which really feels like a certain human strength. It's more dreamlike, and that perhaps is the reason for it not being as easily accessible.
Well, as I expected, we have lots of people who want to talk with you and ask questions. And let's begin with Paul. Paul, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
Okay, my question is, I've heard a recording of Debussy playing Claire de Lune himself,
mm-hmm.
and it took about 4 minutes.
Right.
And just about everybody else, it takes about 5 minutes. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on, did people just take things slower back then?
Well, the interesting thing with those Debussy recordings, and I know them very well because I studied them, are that they're piano rolls. And so the question is the speed of the playback of the piano roll itself. And the recordings that we're hearing, if I am not mistaken, because I'm not 100% sure, is a playback of a piano roll, and that piano roll can be played at various tempos, and it's possibly not the exact tempo that he played it at. What is more curious about those piano rolls is that when I first listed them, I was quite taken aback at how differently Debussy played his music than how we play his music today. And in fact, some people said, oh, the best thing to do when it comes to Debussy and his music is not listen to how he plays it because he doesn't know how. And yet, you have people who were by him in his day who very much so said that nobody can play Debussy's music like Debussy. I tend to agree. If you listen several times, he captures something very honest and very new and very fresh in that playing. Rhythmically, he's much more free. I will say at the opening of his Claire de Lune, the one that you have heard, he goes quite fast and it's rather uneven. It's not the way I would approach it today myself, or I think any pianist would, but one has to take the composer at his own self-judgment, and I suppose he knew what he was doing, so perhaps playing Claire de Lune a little faster is an idea to look at.
And Paul, thank you for your call. We've got a breaking news story here because And I just want to mention it because when you experience a Paris, a love story, you also experience Paris. I think that's part of the intention, if I dare say what your intention may be, mm-hmm. to communicate to the audience with the setting and with
I hope
a little
you're
bit of a travelogue.
Good news? Are you giving good news?
No, unfortunately I'm not.
Oh,
Most
I'm
news
so
is bad. A fire
has
broken out of the famous Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, firefighters
oh, really?
Say. The cause is not yet clear, but officials say it could be linked to renovation work. That's right out of the BBC News. Mm. But let me go to more of our callers, and we have a caller. Daniel? Join us. Morning.
Hi there.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi. I have a question about your comment of Debussy being kind of one of the many sparks that lit the fire of jazz, and mm-hmm. jazz being so deeply rooted in improvisation. As a performer, when I've played Debussy and other French works, there are so many markings on the page that you often are kind of really guided by the composer. What are your thoughts on Debussy and maybe how it led up to the improvisatory features of jazz?
Well, I think Debussy, several things with Debussy in terms of performance. The markings are interesting. He is very specific about certain things, but if you'll notice, one thing that he rarely ever marks in his scores are pedal markings. Are you a pianist, if I may ask?
Actually, I'm a wind player. I'm a bassoonist.
You're a bassoonist. It's interesting going into the piano in terms of improvisation. He doesn't really address how you address the instrument itself in terms of color, pedaling, and so on and so forth. He addresses tempo and so on. But what I think was interesting with Debussy, it's his harmonic invention that is so wonderful, and that laid a certain groundwork for what became known as improvisatory jazz later on. But we do know that by the accounts of Debussy in his life, by his contemporaries, that he was a masterful improviser at the piano, that he could sometimes just sit down, have an idea, and begin to improvise in what we consider jazz today. The difference is they didn't have recordings in the same way, so we couldn't record it like we did Art Tatum. And I've always thought that Art Tatum, for me, you know, who is such a great improviser, was a reflection of what people like Debussy and Chopin and Beethoven were like in their day, except they didn't have live recording in order to capture those improvisations. And then eventually these improvisations had to be written down in some way in order to leave them for the public. But I do believe that the spirit improvisation was always there as the origin of where the music came from.
And let me thank Daniel for the call. One associates the genius of improvisation very strongly with somebody like Art Tatum. We've got seconds left here. We're going to end with some Debussy music, but who's at the top of your food chain, so to speak, when it comes to
improvisation?
Improvisational piano?
It's got to be Art Tatum.
Yeah.
Art Tatum, for me, is captures the miracle of being a musician, a pianist, a fast thinker, a colorist, everything possible.
We'll have to leave it there. Good to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. And you can see Hirschfelder's A Paris Love Story playing now through May 5th at the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts, all about the life and music of Claude Debussy and the most personal of Hirschfelder's work. When we return, we're going to talk about theater in a different vein. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.